From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Perception versus the truth. Jason Burmis on today's News Talk, TNT.
Second hour of the show coming in hot. And, you know, let's talk Donnie T and all of these trials, right? Look, I voted for Trump twice. The first time around, it's because I didn't really think that there was a third party option. I did love a lot of what he was saying in those primary debates. But if I had had my choice, I've already mentioned the guy today, Rand Paul would have been my nominee. Now, I voted third party before. In fact, the first time that I voted for president, I voted for a black woman. You know, because I'm such a bigot, I decided not to vote for Barack Obama. I actually voted for someone I thought did a damn good job and couldn't really care about their identity politics. That was Cynthia McKinney under the Green Party, one of the very few people that had challenged the establishment, especially the political establishment, Donald Rumsfeld, in hearings on 9/11, which kind of goes back to the beginning of the show. But in my lifetime, I have never seen a president prosecuted for any of their many in-your-face war crimes. Not Clinton, not the Barack star, certainly not Bush 1 or 2. And let me tell you, they committed a lot of them. The only accountability I've ever seen in my life was when I was a kid via Iran-Contra. And in many cases, that was a slap on the wrist. A lot of those people were pardoned. And really, the person they made the all-star of that, Oliver North, was given book deals and TV and radio shows and appearances. So I've never seen them go after a, if you will, tyrant that's gotten to the top levels. Now, Donnie T, imperfect, right? I think there were some parts of his presidency that I did not love. Let's talk about them. For instance, he talked a good game when it was to get out of wars. Remember, we were going to get out of Syria? He was talking about that in the weeks before the non-event in Douma, which he still says was a chemical attack by Assad to this day. It's been disproven in numerous accounts. Actually, WikiLeaks, even though Assange was in the Ecuadorian prison at the time, published the emails that would begin the hearings of the OPCW, that is the Office of Proliferation of Chemical Weapons, that showed there was, in fact, no chemical attack at all. That's a big problem, Don. And then let's get to Assange himself. A lot of people don't know, but Donald Trump did send an envoy over to the Ecuadorian embassy during the Russia hoax. Who did he send? He sent Dana Rohrabacher. Now, Rohrabacher is not perfect. And when I say not perfect, he was one of the guys that was going on Bill Maher's Real Time during the beginning of the War of Terror and saying that the Iraqis were literally going to litter us with flower petals and thank us for democracy after we had taken Saddam Hussein out. To his credit, he admitted he got that one wrong. But when they sent Rohrabacher there, they sent him with a specific mission. They wanted Assange to come and testify as to where the DNC emails had come from. And Assange simply told him, first of all, I am not going to reveal my sources, but on the record, numerous times I have said, what? Nobody in Russia had anything to do with it. In other words, this was not a Russia hack. This was not the GRU. This was not the Poot himself putting this stuff out. He had also, in a previous interview, actually put up a bounty for any information leading to those that had killed Seth Rich. Now, that's just the beginning of that story. I would tell people to go listen to Seymour Hersh and some of the conversations that Ed Butowski taped in that regard, because Hersh himself actually on these tapes said that somebody within the FBI had got him a document saying that the FBI indeed did look into the Seth Rich case when they were supposed to have no documents on it. When that went to court, the person that supposedly gave him that was Andrew McCabe, the deputy director of the FBI and no fan of Trump, mind you. So that makes it even thicker as to what was real and what wasn't. But none of that has been put into the public arena, and they're still running the Russia hoax. And by the way, Donnie T didn't help out Assange. Assange gets charged with the Espionage Act. And guess what? So does Don. Don is now being charged with the Espionage Act. Is there no irony there? You didn't do the right thing. They came after you. And it does look like all of this is political, but we should have been full prepared because we knew we were in a banana republic. The minute they said an old dementia patient got 81 million votes, we would audit it on no level. And then when people protested it, it wasn't a riot. It was an insurrection. And it was time to literally put the barbed wire up around DC, an unprecedented moment in American history. But we got those moments almost every day, it seems like. We're going to take a break in a moment. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Elon Musk, free speech, defamation, much more with Adam Ruckus back after this with more TNT Radio.
Clashing on the controversies.
It's a woke society and I am fed up with it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A federal judge in California has dismissed a lawsuit by Elon Musk's X against the Nonprofit Center for Countering Digital Hate, CCDH, ruling that the lawsuit was an attempt to silence critics of the social media platform. Here with the story and joining us is TNT News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. Adam, thank you once again for joining us. Tell us about this story.
Thanks, Jason. Sometimes I wonder who's getting more of the lawfare stick shaken at them, Musk or Trump. They both get it all the time, don't they? This is everybody's favorite, I'm sure yours and mine, dear viewers and listeners. This is everyone's favorite self-styled hate speech watchdog organization. That's what the CCDH, that's what they how they describe themselves, actually. So that should be a red flag right there, speaking of red flags. So X Corp, formerly known of Twitter, as Twitter, of course, had originally filed a complaint in July of last year. They alleged that the CCDH had illegally scraped data off the social media platform and cherry-picked said data to bolster a narrative that the social media platform is, quote, overwhelmed by harmful content, end quote, and used said narrative to scare companies into diverting their advertising dollars away from the platform. Y'all might remember this. Now, it's been denied, dismissed in its entirety, shot down. This is thanks to U.S. District Judge Charles Breyer of California's Northern Federal Court District. I'll make this easy, give you the low-hanging fruit. That's San Francisco. So we got a blue city, blue state. You get the idea. But yeah, he dismissed the lawsuit on Monday, concluding that the social media platform had not demonstrated sufficient likelihood its case would succeed on the merits and appeared to instead be trying to punish CCDH for otherwise permissible free speech. Oh, yeah, he went there. Here's what Judge Breyer wrote of the lawsuit, quote, "Sometimes it is unclear what is driving a litigation, and only by reading between the lines of a complaint can one attempt to surmise a plaintiff's true purpose. Other times a complaint is so unabashedly and vociferously about one thing that there can be no mistaking that purpose. This case represents the latter circumstance. This case is about punishing the defendants for their speech," end quote. Okay. CCDH's CEO Imra Ahmed welcomed Judge Breyer's decision. Of course he did. In a post, ironically enough, on the X platform on Monday, saying, quote, "This ruling sends a strong message to those who aim at intimidating and silencing independent research." There was a lot in the reporting and also from the CCDH. They keep talking about this thing called SLAP. You can't make these things up. What did he say? He said, quote, "Musk's and X Corp's strategy is to keep this case in court for as long as possible to burden us with spiraling legal costs." That's what CCDH posted on X before the hearing. Quote, "This is a clear case of SLAP, strategic litigation against public participation, aimed to scare us away from doing research on X," end quote. Ah, okay, sure. So as The Guardian was happy to point out all the the dealings that Musk's been going through since he bought Twitter back in 2022 and then later renamed it X. It's weird. A slew of major advertisers had left the platform amid a documented rise in hate speech on the platform and a shift away from established news outlets to low quality viral content. This is coming from The Guardian, just so you know. Musk has lashed out over the loss of advertisers with a series of lawsuits against groups that monitor hate speech, including suing CCDH in California and a separate suit in Texas against the progressive nonprofit Media Matters. There's another interesting one. And Guardian was more than happy to point out that during an onstage event with the New York Times in November, Musk himself, additionally, in person, real life, no deep fake, I'm sure you remember, told advertisers who had left the platform to, quote, go F yourself, end quote. Yeah, it was an amusing thing. So, but yeah, there's lots of these type of things. But they're trying to claim that Elon Musk is only suing these corrupt, bizarre, like, this is so weird to me. I don't know. What's your take on all this, Jason?
So first of all, I think it's a terrible decision, and you know that I am no fan of Musk, and we'll get into that in a moment. I mean, it was just announced this week from Reuters that he's quote unquote building the new spy satellite system for the U.S. Defense Department. So it's because he's such an enemy. Meanwhile, he already uses Starlink as their communication system in Ukraine. The highest concentration of those dishes is in Ukraine. It's not just communications. They also hook into the Ghost and Sidewinder drones. So this guy's a defense contractor. We should start there. It's bad that they are supporting the idea not only that this is protected free speech without a jury trial, because he's basically making a defamation claim. He's saying that these guys are cooking the numbers and that this isn't hate speech. We're not even going to bring this to trial. Yet, when you look at actual lawfare examples, let's use California in particular, there's no problem with Monsanto continually suing farmers that aren't using their seeds, but there may be cross-contamination to actually put them out of business. So that double standard is glaringly in your face. But let's talk about quote-unquote free speech and all these platforms to begin with, because I mentioned during the last hour that there's this plausible deniability circle, right? You have people from the FBI or other departments of the government coming in and saying, well, there may be disinformation. Remember, the Zuck came out and said, well, we heard about that Hunter Biden laptop weeks before, and they said, watch out for that Russian disinfo. So we didn't do our own research. Remember, the judge is encouraging these guys to do their own research, but Zuck and the gang, they don't do their own research. And God forbid a guy like me does his own research. Bad, bad, bad. And then they censor that laptop, despite the fact, again, that's something that was with the intelligence community prior to the election itself. That should tell you something. And another thing that is not discussed enough when we're talking about technology and the government is the signature reduction program. Most people don't know it exists, but over 2 years ago, William Arkin wrote an in-depth article about America's secret military of over 60,000 people, much larger than the clandestine forces of the Central Intelligence Agency, that were embedded in household companies and basically were allowed to not only create identities, but manipulate them as well. I would encourage everybody to read that. And if that's the case, we would all be very naive to think that signature reduction, which is not its official name, it's an art form, has not infiltrated the Googles, the X's, the Facebooks, and every other large-scale social media or technology that has any influence over the populace, Adam.
Yeah. And you know, it's so funny that people, it's like history began when Elon Musk purchased Twitter and then renamed it X, right? I mean, who owned it before him? I'm sure that guy was above board, right? Jack Dorsey? I mean, what was he involved with? What were all of these people involved with back in the day? Did someone say Palantir? Let's go there. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you can't trust any of these fools. So I see this narrative. It's similar with the Trump thing. I see them doing the same thing with Elon. Like, this is why I got confused with this story, because there's all this this desire to present Elon Musk as being some sort of free speech absolutist. That's garbage. That's absolutely nonsense. Sorry to burst your bubble, people, if you really thought he was that. He's not. And then now we have this, where it looks like he's trying to – this is so – this is – I don't know what they're doing with this guy, but they're really trying to set up these people to be like I would call them antichrist type people, but false saviors, false hope, like, oh, the Trumpster is going to come and what happened to lock her up? You know, I know you said you voted for him twice, but like, you know, once was enough for me and he didn't lock her up. I'm like, you lost my second vote, buddy. So, you know, we have to hold these people to the fire. And, you know, I don't know what to say about this whole story, but Elon Musk, I don't trust him. And I also don't trust Trump, of course.
Yeah, no, I think that especially when you look at that platform, it's not a free speech platform. By the way, everybody, free speech at its base level is a very low bar to begin with. Adam, thank you so much for joining us. He's going to be joining us throughout the week here at TNT Radio. Guys, we are rocking and rolling over here. We hope you give us a follow over on social media, or better yet, go to tntradio.live and make that donation. Support real free speech, real investigative journalism, and we've got a real treat for you on the flip side of this break. Michael Yon joins us. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT Radio after this.
TNT's David Curtin.
In my mind, government spending in the UK is absolutely horrendous. It has got completely out of control over the last 14 years of Conservative rule and 13 years before that of Labour rule. You would probably be astounded if you actually knew how much the government spent. In this financial year, these are the figures, the estimate for how much it wants to spend on everything, or how much it needs to spend, is £1.2 trillion, or 1.2 million million, if you like, which is an amount of money that we cannot really comprehend.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT.
Government report on prescription drug pricing points to corporate mouth.
Freedom of the press is about your right to know.
What are you talking about, man? Look at his stats. Spark sheer
athleticism. It's about your right to be informed. Your right to access all types of information keeps us free as a nation.
No.
Today, there are real threats to press freedom.
Reaching residential areas by...
And your right to know about the world around us.
Look.
Some threats are obvious, some are easy to miss, but they all put our way of life at risk. We must defend against all of these threats, no matter what kind of news is important to you.
Justified putting American troops in harm's way?
That's a great question.
We must protect our right to know before it's too late. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
I'm your retirement fear, but don't be scared. You're still in pre-retirement.
Pre-retirement? Does that mean I have more time to plan?
Precisely. Here, this is pre-retirement.org.
Retirement savings options? Potential tax breaks?
Yep. Boo.
Oh, I could build up savings for my side hustle. This isn't scary. I'm doing it.
You got this.
Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan.
If you're still wearing a cloth or surgical mask around in public, you're guilty of spreading COVID misinformation.
It really is that simple.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
TNT Radio, bringing you the hardcore guest, Michael Yon, joining us. I want to say thank you so much. He really needs no introduction, as more and more people have become aware of his work, even though he's been doing this for decades, because he's at the border and he's been blowing the whistle for some time. So, Michael, first off, thank you so much for joining us. Why is the border maybe the most important issue right now, not only in the United States, but possibly even globally?
Yeah, we really have no border now. It's over. I'm down, whether it's Morocco or Lithuania, Netherlands, Japan, even, believe it or not. A lot of people don't believe Japan would ever allow this to happen, but they are allowing it to happen as well. By the way, I've written 3 books on Chinese information war that are only in Japanese language, because I've been working to wake up the Japanese for many years. They're not even in English. But right now I'm in the Bahamas. Why am I in the Bahamas? The last time I did a vacation, I was probably, 18 years old on spring break in high school. So right now I'm in the Bahamas because this is America's third border, right? I've been all across the American southern border, from SpaceX at Boca Chica to San Diego, right? A lot of that on the Mexican side and the U.S. side, Colombia, Darien Gap, all the Central American countries. I've seen the border issues, right? But this, Bahamas, is America's third border. A lot of people don't realize that a lot of people are coming in through the Bahamas, and the Chinese are moving in here, and seriously moving in here. For instance, the Chinese Communist Party has a port just maybe 60 miles off the Florida coast. It's right there, a big container port. So they're building a huge embassy here in the Bahamas, in Nassau, where I'm at now. And then we have many Haitians coming through. Interestingly, yesterday I had a very interesting meeting with a very interesting Bahamian, somebody from Bahamas. And he said now Haitians who are coming in, first generation, are actually getting jobs as policemen and in the military, right? And in other political positions and whatnot. In other words, we were talking about demographic warfare, right? Which is something I've seen in Tibet when I was in Tibet. I've seen it in Macau and Hong Kong. Of course, I got kicked out of Hong Kong in 2020, but I was there watching the last throes of the Hong Kong resistance for 7 months. But the main way the Chinese Communist Party took Hong Kong was really through demographic replacement. They just were bringing in enough mainland Chinese, Mandarin-speaking Han Chinese, to replace and supplant the native Cantonese, mostly Cantonese-speaking, Hong Kongers. And so the mainlanders came in, Chinese Communist Party, they took over positions as teachers, professors, politicians, policemen, the normal takeover of the cockpit, basically, right? And so, rewriting the history books, telling the Hong Kongers they should not be speaking Cantonese because it's a low dialect and that sort of thing. So I've seen this in many places. And now I see it in different parts, for instance, of Central America. Was just down in Honduras as an example, and the Chinese Communist Party has a archaeological team down there. Masako Ganaha, the Japanese journalist, noticed that and said, "Let's go to Honduras." So we went down there. Basically, what they're doing with this information war is the Chinese Communist Party is working to persuade Native Americans. And when I say Native Americans, I don't mean just Native North Americans, but from Canada, United States, Mexico, all the way through Central America and in the South American countries, persuading all of them that they're actually Chinese who came over the land bridge, and that all this land is actually theirs and was taken from them, and that they need to work with the Chinese Communist Party to take, or they won't say Communist Party, they'll say work with our cousins to take it back, right? So you'll have these sorts of things. I was just down in El Salvador some months ago with Masako, and we went into this giant library that's being built in downtown San Salvador. It's got a big Chinese Communist Party flag out front, and it's built by China Aid, which is sort of like US Aid, but it's 7 floors above ground, and it's basically just a big brainwashing center, and it's mostly video game. It's supposed to be a library, but we went all through the library, so-called library, and there was no very serious sections on physics or math or chemistry or MBA or history, that sort of. It was mostly just like video games and that sort of thing. There were book sections, but they just weren't what you're used to, let's put it that way. And so in order to play the video games, they've got all these really big screen video games with the pedals and all that stuff. And like real serious, like almost like flight simulator stuff, right? So you have to come in and read a book for 30 minutes so that they'll give you 1 hour of video time on your, what they call the key to knowledge, right? It's like a video library card, right? And so, in other words, I see these things everywhere I go. And whether it's, you know, I spent a lot of time in China, spent about a year in China, and went to a lot of, you know, I spent about 18 years in Asia, and I go to a lot of libraries and statues and that sort of thing. And that's where you can pick up the footprints of the information work. You should always look at museums, libraries, archaeological sites, statues, if you know what you're looking for, and you can pick up a lot. For instance, Misako Ganaha, the Japanese journalist about 10 days ago or so, she's in the Bahamas now researching with us. But she was in Okinawa, and she was talking about a dragon statue there in Okinawa, Japan. And I asked her while she's live with us, it was just Ann Vanderseel, Masako, and I on this private live chat. I said, can you go to the statue and see how many claws it has on it? The Chinese dragon. And she went there and she put the, you know, the phone camera on it and had 5 claws. And that means something. With the Chinese, when they have 5 claws on their statue, it means that they're claiming that land is theirs, right? They have dominion over
that.
Michael,
we've got to take a quick break to the headlines. I want to talk about this migration from Hong Kong via China and how it's really similar to what we're seeing here with political motivations, because so many people point out when we're talking about this migration that if you dare talk about the replacement theory, you're a bigot, when it's really about social and political demographics. We're going to kick it to the headlines, back with more TNT Radio after this.
What station is this?
Station. Ladies and gentlemen,
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The United Nations Security Council has unanimously demanded an immediate ceasefire in the Israel-Gaza conflict, alongside the release of all hostages, with the United States abstaining from the vote. The Philippines Defense Secretary Gilberto Teodoro has called for China to submit its South China Sea maritime sovereignty claims to international arbitration, following an incident where Chinese Coast Guard ships used water cannons against a Philippine supply vessel at the Second Thomas Shoal.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction.
Misinformation from the truth.
From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, this is TNT Radio.
We were talking about migration, and at the very end, you were talking about symbolism and that China with the 5 claws means that this is theirs. They have that viewpoint. And again, you talked about how they basically flooded Hong Kong with not only individuals, but political tools to take that over. You mentioned Haitians earlier coming in and taking the jobs in politics, in law enforcement, etc. In the United States, if you dare to speak about this, you're a white supremacist. This really doesn't have anything to do with race. And instead, this has been a playbook for a very long time that's now just coming to the United States. Correct, Michael?
Right. You know, those who will throw around the white supremacist or anti-Semite every time they disagree, those are what I call clowns. They're basically dirtballs, and in many cases, they're actual enemies. And at very best, they're just, okay, let's use a word that my grandmother would disapprove of, stupid. But you know, words are atomic structures of truth and lies, right? And so we have to stick with the right words. So if we call this undocumented migration, that's 2 lies, right? For instance—
Illegal invasion is what we should be calling it if we want to be honest, yep. Right?
Those would be accurate terms. Like, for instance, if you want to make water, you need hydrogen and oxygen, right? Two hydrogens, one oxygen, and they have to be, you know, do a couple of little magic and you got water, right? And likewise, but if you want to make water out of, say, lithium and oxygen, it won't work, right? Or hydrogen and lithium, it won't work. So even if one of the words is wrong, it's wrong. It's just wrong. The entire book that you base that off of will be wrong, right? Like, you know, experimental vaccine, two wrong words, right? So right now what we have is a hybrid war. Those are accurate terms, right? We are being invaded. That is accurate in full. This is a war. It's going to get extremely bloody. I've been in a lot of war. I've spent a lot of time in many wars and conflicts. I know what I'm looking at. I returned to the United States in about August of 2020. I spent most of my life overseas, right? In fact, in the previous 20 years before that, by far, most of it had been like Iraq, Afghanistan, and different places like that. So when I saw what was happening in the United States in mid to late 2020, I returned realizing this is it. It's game on. And it's very clear that we're going to go into incredibly serious food issues, right? I've talked about this many times. I was just on Tucker recently. It hasn't aired yet. We talked about that on there. I was just on with Sean Ryan talking about it there and many others. I've talked about this with millions of people. We're clearly going into global famines. The flash to bang is very long. But for instance, I was in Europe. I was in Germany at BASF chemical plant before Nord Stream was interrupted. Why was I there? I was there twice before Nord Stream was interrupted. On the second trip to BASF, they get most of their feedstock from Nord Stream, or got it, right? So on that second trip, I was inside the plant getting a tour, and I asked the German man giving the tour, what happens if Nord Stream gets interrupted? And he said, BASF is dead. Well, it's not dead yet, but it's certainly, and now, you know, I bought a separate iPad that I did nothing but watch the flows through Nord Stream. There was a website where you could watch how many cubic meters per second were going through of gas, right? And I was watching that, and one night it just went to zero. And I said, that's interesting. I called a few people and I'm like, what happened? Maybe the website's down. And obviously it was bubbling to the top. It happened just like I thought it would. I had been writing that I thought Nord Stream was going to get interrupted. Likewise, Groningen gas fields. I was there last March, so a year ago. I left Panama, because Panama is also vital terrain, and I went back to Netherlands. I went to Groningen gas field, and I was publishing. I think they're going to close Groningen gas field, which is the biggest gas field in Europe. But again, people were saying, you're a conspiracy theorist, blah, 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 and now it's closed. That's a big, big deal. These are all additive pressures to creating global famine. You need that natural gas because you need the hydrogen off the natural gas to do something called the Haber-Bosch process. The Haber-Bosch process is named after two German chemists, Fritz Haber and Karl Bosch. In 1914, BASF, that plant that I was at a couple of years ago, started making the first nitrogenous fertilizers out of that natural gas. And since that time, huge population explosions around the world, largely, not only, but largely due to the availability of nitrogenous fertilizers in bulk, right? So as you cut down Nord Stream and Groningen and many others, there's a lot more. As you cut this down, it increases the prices of the nitrogenous fertilizers, and now people are using less nitrogenous fertilizers, which means they'll have fewer crops, less vibrant crops. Bottom line is, watch the food. Let's skip past all the analysis and get to the food prices. Notice food prices are going. So after you add and subtract everything off, look at the food prices. Food prices continue to go up. That will lead, food prices alone can literally begin, start famines, even when there's plenty of food. For instance, in the 1920s in Germany, the Weimar Republic, they had hyperinflation. That hyperinflation helped create famine. Because people couldn't afford the food, they start stealing it from the warehouses and the trains and the trucks and the farmers, and now they stop growing it and stop transporting it, and I get a famine. Now, famine, interestingly, creates more famine. Famine also creates pandemic. Pandemic, famine, and war, they always go together. Pandemic, famine, war always go together. For instance, it's even in the Bible, the four horsemen, Pandemic, famine, and war are three of the horsemen, right? They knew this stuff 2,000 years ago. But I assure you, as somebody who studies war, it's as legitimate today as it was when they wrote it in the Bible, right? So pandemic, famine, and war. It's clear that the globalists are driving us into global famines. That's why I keep calling it a gigacide. I mean, it's clear that more than a billion people, when everything ends up, there will not be enough nutrition for at least over a billion people who are alive today. That, in addition to other things that are unfolding, you see so many fires. I've been reporting on something called screwworms now for, what, I don't know, 2.5, 3 years, warning that I thought screwworms would make their way back to the United States. And now they're coming back. They're coming up through, that's something that most the veterinarians out there probably know what I'm talking about. Some actually will not. But screwworms were a big deal in the United States up until a generation and a half ago when our elders kicked the screwworms out of the United States. They fought them down through Mexico, through Central America, and the front line against screwworms, these are flesh-eating worms. They eat a lot of cattle, sheep, anything that has meat, including people. They kill people. But these screwworms were devastating to our agriculture. So we fought them out, our elders fought them out, and the line of scrimmage, or the front line, is the Darien Gap, where I spend so much time. But I was warning roughly 3 years ago. Anyway, they're coming back, sir. Go ahead.
Michael, we do have to take a break quickly. When we come back, I want to talk about this famine that you see coming. Where are we going to see it? What kind of timeline? And you just mentioned this affecting a billion people on the planet. Traditionally, famines have really occurred in third, sometimes second world nations, but I have a feeling you're going to tell us this is going to hit the first world as well. We're going to take that break. It's TNT Radio, and we'll be back with more after this.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future, with nutritious food to eat. A chance to learn, to get an education, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams. By ensuring that they have access to health care, education, life skills, and more, so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves.
Gracias. Gracias.
Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes. Good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
See, Smokey thinks I'm funny.
Disassembling the lies and reassembling the truth. This is the Jason Burma Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
We are with journalist and on-the-ground pioneer Michael Yon. You're talking about famine. Now, traditionally, at least in my lifetime, we've only seen this in third world, sometimes second world nation. Now, you've mentioned two aspects that could bring famine, not only the inflationary price of food, but then the regulation of nitrogen itself and the ability to grow that food. Now, during the COVID 1984 nightmare, there were some shortages of food in places, kind of prepping us. But then the inflation we've seen in this country is like that of never before in my lifetime. A lot of people want to talk about 8%, but let's talk about the basics in food. First of all, the dollar store is not only now $1.25, but they have the $3 and $5 section for a lot of the products that were available for a buck only a couple years ago. Then I look at things like water. I used to be able to get a liter of water over at the local Walmart or Target, etc., for about 88 cents. That's $1.38 right now. That's a lot more than 8%. There is not a lot of confidence in a lot of the traditional markets here. Inflation does seem to be on the rise. We're also having bank failures. How do these things factor in? And then what is the timeline you're seeing on these famines? And where do you predict they will occur first and then the hardest?
Timelines are always very difficult to predict. That's the most difficult and dangerous to predict. But it is all about conditions. I'm always watching conditions. I don't pay attention to sparks or any of that stuff. Sparks, you know, you've heard the saying that amateurs talk about tactics and professionals talk about logistics. And there's a corollary. Amateurs talk about sparks and professionals talk about conditions, right? So what we see now is our enemies are creating the conditions for famine. And eventually there'll be some sparks because there's always sparks. And then they'll actually catch. Remember, famine actually creates more famine, oddly, like fire creates fire, war creates war, pandemic creates pandemic. They all create each other. One of the things that they all create is HOP, human osmotic pressure. Human osmotic pressure is the push and pull of migration. So one of the reasons I spend so much time in places like Darien Gap down in Panama, Colombia, is because that's a main route through South America up to the United States, up into the other Americas, and then up into the United States. So I've spent maybe 6 months there since Biden was installed because I first started warning about famine in about maybe February-ish of 2020. I could clearly see that we're about to, conditions are being set for it, right? And so I started warning about it then and many times. And since then, I've never stopped. I've only gotten louder about it. But then I started going to the migratory routes, or let's say the invasion routes or migratory routes, both depending on what's going on. But through the Darien Gap, now I see the NGOs funded mostly by the United States, like IOM, the International Organization for Migration, HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, and others are helping, for instance, establish and reinforce and increase the size of routes such as through the Darien Gap, all the way up through the Americas, through Mexico. Now, what will happen when this HOP increases, the human osmotic pressure from economic collapse, from food issues, from actual famines, that'll create huge positive pressure HOPs. So people will be pushed away from those famines and they're going to go to where the food is, which for the now is still the United States, right? And they'll come up all up on our shore. That's why I'm in Bahamas right now. I'm in Bahamas not for vacation, but because Bahamas is a third border, right? You can eat. There's a Chinese container port, like, I don't know, 60 miles off Florida, probably close to me now, right? So what I'm getting to is this is another route to the United States. We have Haitians flowing through constantly. We have Chinese flowing through here to the United States. And then, of course, there's the southern border. I've been across that entire border. And then there's the Canadian border, right? There's people flowing through and all these methods, not to mention, of course, student visas and all the other normal methods. And then we have people flying in 24/7 on what's called the CBP-1 app. In other words, the United States government, with the United States military as well, which is part of the government, are actually smuggling people into the United States. But they're doing it legally. So is it smuggling? You know, I mean, they're clearly committing treason against the American people. The government is. They're clearly overwhelming. You know, you see Obrador in Mexico, that you see the big fight and his threats for this, that, and the other, flooding the United States with aliens. But in reality, that's all kayfabe. That's wrestling fighting. They're also coming over. We're flying them in. So, but now we got this fake fight going with Obrador, like, oh, you're going to have to keep them out. They're coming across the Canadian border. They're coming through here.
Michael, let me just talk about that treasonous aspect for a second, because it is open treason. And you talked about language earlier, and I think that we do have to do that. We've not only incentivized these people, we've financially given them the tools to come into this country. We're flying them in, we're finding them homes. And now when I say we, our government is openly colluding with big business. This story about Tyson Foods and how they have now fired people in Iowa, shut down plants, but brought migrants up into upstate New York. They're going to pay him $16.25 an hour. And look, you also get a lawyer. And that lawyer is going to keep you in the country. It's a quote unquote migrant lawyer. This is open and arrogant treason by not only our government, but again, corporations like Tyson that are colluding with them. And it's right in our face.
They don't hide it. I mean, the Border Patrol, again, I've been across the entire U.S. border from SpaceX at the mouth of the Rio Grande there. That's on the Mexican border, Texas-Mexico border. I've been there. I spent weeks down there. I've been from that side all the way to San Diego. A lot of that on the Mexican side and the entire side on the U.S. side, right? And the Border Patrol picks them up there as we speak. Border Patrol is loading them up on buses, loading up the invaders on buses, and bringing them deeper into the country. So the Border Patrol is actually part of the invasion. Governor Abbott of Texas, he's a member of the World Economic Forum. I was one of the first that were going against him very hard. One of the first who's not a left winger that wanted, you know, Beto or the other clowns in there, right? I was very clear that they ran him against people like Beto because all the conservatives, which are my friends, would say, well, what do you want, Beto or him? Well, it's a false choice because he is WEF, World Economic Forum. I mean, Governor Abbott is the Texas sector chief for the invasion. He is the invader in chief for Texas. So when you see Abbott busing up people to New York or other places, and my conservative friends in Texas, where I spend a great deal of time, at first, like, yeah, they're going to teach those blue states. I'm like, you don't understand what's going on. He's taking it and he's punching it deeper into our heart with a hypodermic, right? And he's clearing the banks of the Rio Grande so that more can come through, right? Abbott is World Economic Forum. Trudeau is World Economic Forum. Biden, he's just some meat puppet. But if he had a brain, he would be World Economic Forum. He's for anybody that pays him. You know, the mice, right? Mice. How do you recruit people? Money, ideology, coercion, ego. Money, ideology, coercion, ego. On that scale, the two cheeses which most interest people like Biden are money and ego. Money and ego. He doesn't have any ideology. His ideology is just money and ego, right? And so people like that are the ones that your enemies want to hire, right? By paying them. So they basically hire them, right? And one way to hire people who have huge egos is you pay them with their own ego, right? Literally pay them with their own ego. In other words, give them the spotlight. Hey, you're a hero, that sort of thing. That's what Biden and his whole crime family is doing, right? It's money and ego, right? Those are the types of people you want to install. Likewise, with just a long list. So the bottom line is we are being invaded by our own government. Now we have these kayfabe fights, these fake fights like professional wrestling going on. Now it's between Obrador and the United States. But in reality, the United States is the one doing this, period. We are the main funder of this. I'm down there with them all the time. The NGOs, for instance, in Panama, at the City of Knowledge, Old Fort Clayton, right? And in the Darien Gap, it's the United States. I'm physically present months on end watching our people do this. By the time they get to Mexico, the United States has loaded them into the funnels and hyper-blasted them up to Mexico. They go to Tapachula. I've been there as well. Tapachula is like the... There's a river between Tapachula and Guatemala. I've been down there, and they cross. That's sort of like the Rio Grande of Mexico, you might say. Tapachula is the southernmost city in Mexico. So you got huge numbers of people. After they make it through South America, through the Darien Gap, others join up in Nicaragua and a few other places. They fly into Guatemala, for instance, and then they go through. Most of them go through Tapachula. And from there, that's where you'll see, like, Oscar Blue. He does incredible work. He's been through the Darien Gap now four times. He's a madman. He's physically really tough, super smart. Oscar Blue is always on the spot. Oscar has briefed us up extensively about, for instance, these caravans. And also Guatemalan intelligence gave us an extensive briefing on them months ago, where they said these caravans really are, they have multi uses. They're not really to get people into the U.S. border because you're going to go through that anyway. What the caravans are for is, one, information war, because information war is the highest form of warfare. So you're just showing, hey, we're going up. So that encourages more people to come. And another thing is the caravans are really good for human smuggling and drug smuggling, because when you got thousands of people there and many of them are violent men, the police, now there's only a limited amount that they can do with groups like that. So basically you get to smuggle huge amounts of people and drugs further up north towards the United States and finally into the United States. That's why they do the caravan. The caravans don't form by themselves. There's a certain person down there. I'm sorry. There's a certain person down there that actually, organizes them. I've forgotten the guy's name. Actually, a good man to get on to talk about this is Oscar Blue. He's an expert on this stuff. I think he's going on about maybe his 13th caravan soon. And so Oscar knows Central America quite well.
The big question is, can we turn this around? Is there a way we can reverse this in this country? And if not, what would you suggest to the average American citizen like myself to at least be able to mitigate the effects of what are coming?
I mean, you're going to go into a war, period. I mean, at this point, it's done. It's a done deal. We have crossed the Rubicon. I mean, these years and years of warning that crazy man Alex Jones and others have been doing, turns out he's not crazy after all. Or maybe he went crazy after telling people for so long what's happening and they didn't believe him, right? I mean, Alex, just face it, I've started listening to him. For years, I thought, nah, not Alex Jones. And I started listening to him more and more. I'm like, he's not crazy. He's just getting your attention by acting crazy. You know what I mean?
And by the way, Michael, just so you know, Alex produced several of my documentary films going all the way back to 2006. And I was the first one at InfoWars all the way back in 2009 to get my own show. So I recognized pretty early that even the bravado of Alex Jones when looking into the facts were the real deal. And I would have to agree with you. A lot of his predictions are indeed coming to fruition, Michael.
You saw it. You saw it. You saw it way ahead. I mean, some people have brighter headlights than others. You know, one thing I've learned in my study of famines, by the way, there actually have been a lot of famines in developed countries, believe it or not, like the Hunger Winter of 1944 and 1945 in Netherlands, right? It's called the Hunger Winter, right? That was because of the war, right? And so a lot of, you know, you can quickly get into, or let's say Ukraine under Stalin, right? Or Mao. Mao's Great Famine may have killed 50 million people. Nobody knows, actually. But I mean, so especially these are planned famines. They are, you know, your Stalin was, you know, depopulating the kulaks, what he labeled kulaks in any case. But actually, one of the things I've noticed in famines, in my study of famines, like I've flown over to Japan specifically to study famine in Japan as one example, right? And Masako Ganaha and I, she went through old Japanese archives. She found there was mention of, I think, 503 famines in the last 1,500 years in Japan, right? But it's not like all of Japan was in famine. There'd be like some island here or some part of Japan. But one of the things that we've noticed is there's usually some people that actually see it coming. One is named Kenjiro, as an example. Japanese watching this all know Kenjiro. He's got his statues in every Japanese school. Very smart, autodidact, trained, taught himself. And he saw famines coming at one point, warned all of his people around him, you know, that, you know, what to do, plant millet, not rice, those sorts of things. A lot of people didn't believe him, but he got enough people prepared that nobody in his area starved to death. And that sort of made him famous, right? And then he started doing other things around Japan. But the bottom line is, in different famines we've studied, there's actually, in every case that I recall, there's always some number of people that do notice it coming. And those people that prepare tend to do well. Now, what's happening now, though, is not just that we're going to go into famine and you'll get out the other side. There's clearly a revolution going on. Clearly, the United States is being overthrown just like Europe is, right? Now, I spent a lot of time around Europe. I still go there frequently. I spent more than 6 years in Europe, right? In fact, I was stationed in the Army there as well. So I've seen Europe in detail. That place is gone with the wind at this point. They've crossed the Rubicon. There's no way they're getting out of that without severe bloodshed or losing. But people ask me every single day, where should we go? I'm like, where are you going to go? I mean, you know, unless, you know, I mean, where is 100 million people, Americans, going to run to? Actually, why don't you get together and stop this? Why don't you run to the border? You know what I mean? And like do something about it. Like,
well, we need to organize outside of government. The problem is that so many people are docile, or they look at the last large organization of the American people, and they've got a certain sect of the population calling it an insurrection when it was anything but. We've only got a couple minutes left. My last question to you is, we just saw what happened in Moscow with the border wide open. Have we allowed ourselves to be vulnerable of a Moscow mall style attack, false flag or otherwise, that could be coming soon?
Oh, we've got at least tens of thousands of people like that through. When we're down in the Darien Gap, we see them flowing through every single day with zero exception. Like, large numbers of people from everywhere from Bangladesh to Yemen, Syria every day, Iraqis, tens of thousands of Afghans. Hezbollah coming from Venezuela. You know, there's a lot of Venezuelans that are actually Hezbollah, and they speak Spanish fluently, right? They grew up in Venezuela, right? Now, you got Iranians that fly to Venezuela every day and get new passports. They have a close relationship with Venezuela, Iran does, right? As does the Chinese Communist Party and Russia, right? Right now, the Iranians are helping Venezuela get the same missiles that the Houthis are using to close, you know, the Suez Canal, which is, again, something I warned. A lot of people are like, we never saw the Houthis, you know, would be able to do this. I'm like, what world do you live in where they wouldn't be able to do it? You know, I mean, here it is. And this is a big, all these things are additive pressures.
So, Michael, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find your work and support you?
I'm on X every single day, Michael_Yon. My last name is Yon, Yankee Oscar November, Y-O-N.
Michael, again, thank you so much. And thank you guys for joining me. We're not even a week deep in the new show here at TNTRadio.live. We'll bring it to you Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern. And remember, folks, to me, this is not, or any of these issues, right or left. They are about right and wrong, and they are about the destruction of what is left of this constitutional republic, one of the last bastions of independent freedom. Stay tuned. More TNT Radio after this.